another special podcast right here on Sports Talk Chicago. My name's John Zaglul, and on today's show, we're talking everything Major League Baseball. Today's special guest and I will start off talking about the Tampa Bay Rays and their season thus far, plus the prospects of them moving to Montreal in their future. We'll also talk about some national MLB headlines, and later in the show, we'll talk with him about his amazing broadcasting career, which started right here in Chicago. Now, before we get started, make sure to follow us on Twitter, at ChiTalkSports, and hit me up personally, on Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram, at JohnZags, on Twitter, at JohnZSports, and now on Facebook, at JohnZaglul. Today's show is brought to you by Mucci World, where inspiration meets creation. Call 708-247-2100 to book parties, paint your own pottery, and have art classes for adults and children. Mucci World, creativity at its finest. And by the Windy City Thunderbolts. Celebrate the team's 20th anniversary season by purchasing tickets today. Call 708-489-2255 for your chance to be a part of history this summer in Crestwood. It's now time for our special guest. He began his sports media career in the mid-1980s, writing for Elmhurst College's student newspaper while working for Sports Phone here in Chicago. After his time in college, he transitioned into a baseball coaching role, serving as Elmhurst's pitching coach before becoming the interim head coach at the University of Chicago. By 1991, however, he made his return to sports media, broadcasting Kane County Cougars baseball while hosting radio shows on WMAQ and WMVP-AM. Following stints with the Chicago White Sox, Notre Dame Athletics, and UIC basketball, he's been the radio voice of the Tampa Bay Rays since 2005. Please welcome Dave Wills to the show. Dave, how are you doing today? Thank you for being here on the show.
Well, I'm doing pretty well. Thank you. Enjoying the nice hot day in Boston, Mass. So it's a pleasure to be chatting with you.
Well, Dave, to start today, let's talk about the Rays and, as of late, their extremely active presence in the trade market. We saw this past weekend that the team made a couple of interesting moves, first acquiring infielder Eric Sogard and also going after minor league outfielder Ruben Cardenas. Were you surprised by these trades and the Rays' activity here near the deadline? And also, what are your expectations surrounding Sogard and Cardenas when they join the team?
Well, as far as my surprise, no. I mean, we've usually been fairly active at the trade deadline. I mean, we're more often than not, we're usually looking to enhance our chances to win in the future as opposed to the present. But, you know, you go back to 2 years ago, 2017, and our front office group did a real good job of remaking our bullpen on the run, added guys like Steve Cishek, Dan Jennings, and Sergio Romo, and gave us one of the best bullpens in the second half of the season. Unfortunately, that year, our offense kind of took the rest of the year off, and it didn't help us get to the postseason. And then, you know, last year we made the move where we moved Chris Archer, and a lot of people thought, well, the Rays are waving the white flag and they're not looking to do anything in 2018. And we brought in Austin Meadows and, you know, Tyler Glasnow, and then Shane Baz, who's pitching down in the minor leagues. And it's turned out to be a pretty good trade for the Rays with the injury to Glasnow notwithstanding. So I'm not really surprised that the Rays made some moves. I still think there might be a move or two yet to be made. When you look at the Eric Sogard move, he's a ball-to-bat guy that I think we sorely need. He's a guy that's also versatile that we like to employ on our team, that can play some middle infield, maybe even a corner infield spot, or go to the corner outfield. And reminds me a little bit of a Joey Wendell type that we already have. But Joey's a kind of ball-to-bat guy that we were missing for the first couple of months of the season while he was hurt. So he had some versatility to our lineup. And as far as the young kid from the Indians, I think that was more of just a move where we needed to make some move to clear some 40-man space. We've got a couple of guys that are hopefully going to be coming off the 60-day DL here in the near future, maybe in the next month or so. And we've got some other guys that are coming off the, or I should say the IL, the injured list. And we got to start creating some room. I'd love to see the Rays make at least one or two more moves, though. You know, when you think you have enough pitching, and right now we don't, you need more. We need some bullpen help. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I've been saying since April that I would love to have a guy, have been there, done that guy, but that's going to cost some money, and it's probably going to cost a lot of prospects, and usually the Rays don't overpay. But I'd love to see some additional pitching help to help this team get to the postseason in 2019 for the first time since 2013.
And as you mentioned about the pitching situation, Blake Snell's injury certainly doesn't help things for the Rays. Now, granted, he wasn't having the best year, a 6-7 record and a 4.28 ERA before the injury, but he had put together a string of four very good starts. How much does Snell mean to this rotation, and are the Rays capable of getting by without him and still succeeding on the mound?
Well, whenever you lose a guy like Blake Snell, it's going to affect you. Now, we're hoping that maybe Brendan McKay can slide in here in the very, very near future and provide us an additional starter and give us 5 or 6 innings a night and give us a chance to win. That's exactly what Blake Snell did here over his last handful of starts. As you mentioned, he had been a little more toward the Cy Young type pitcher than he was at times this year. I think he got caught up in thinking, you know what, I was good last year. I won the Cy Young in 2018, and I need to be better. And, you know, hitters will tell you a story. There was no reason for him to try to be better because he was really good last year. So instead of going out there and establishing his fastball early on in the season, he decided, you know what, I got to start spinning the baseball a little bit more. And he ran away from his fastball, and I think it cost him. He lost his fastball command. He wasn't commanding his breaking pitches. So his last handful of starts, Blake got back to throwing the fastball and throwing it for strikes and started to become the Cy Young type pitcher that he was in 2018. So we're hoping he had a surgery on today. And from what I understand, everything went well, and they're hoping that he's going to be back sometime in the month of September. That might be somewhat wishful thinking, but if we can get him back to the point where he can give us 4 or 5 innings, and then you've got, again, Brendan McKay, who's done some nice things in his few starts for the Rays and has been spectacular at the minor league level, we start thickening things up a little bit. Tyler Glass now maybe back in September. If we're still in the thick of things, we start picking up those types of pitchers, I think it can only help the Tampa Bay Rays. I really do.
Dave Wills here on Sports Talk Chicago. And Dave, I think a prevailing theme for this year's Rays team is guys you wouldn't expect to do well coming through when needed. I mean, Yonny Chirinos has served as a reliable middle-of-the-rotation starter. Charlie Morton is an AL Cy Young Award candidate. And at the plate, you've got guys like Avi Garcia and Austin Meadows producing at above-average clips. What's impressed you most about this current team? And again, guys you wouldn't expect making it happen.
Well, you know, I don't know if I would put, you know, Charlie Morton at the top of that list. I think Charlie was a guy that, you know, we had hoped to be a very, very good pitcher, a top of the rotation type pitcher, and I think he's been that and more. I don't know if I could say I'm surprised by it. I mean, usually guys don't get a whole lot better when they're 34, 35 years old, but he's gone out there on every given fifth day. He's given us more than a chance to win a baseball game, and you're right. I think he is a Cy Young Award candidate. I think one of the guys that has to be the biggest surprise right now for the Rays is a guy that wasn't even on our radar go back to April and into May, and that would be Travis d'Arnaud. Travis is a guy that, you know, was coming off a pretty major arm surgery last year and didn't play all that much, and then got let go by the Mets, went over to the Dodgers for a tidbit, and then next thing you know, the Rays said, hey, we needed him. I mean, the Rays are on their sixth catcher. We started out with Mike Zunino and Mikey Perez, and then we had a couple more guys we brought up the minor leagues that got hurt. Then we brought in Eric Sachs, a well-traveled veteran. He lasted a couple of months or maybe a month. And now Travis d'Arnaud has taken over as being maybe one of our most reliable offensive guys. So I think Travis would be at the top of my list. I think another guy that would be at the top or near the top of my list would be Avi. I think a lot of Chicago White Sox fans would be very, very surprised for me to say that he has been a plus defender for us at times out in right field. He's even played some center field now with Kevin Kiermaier hurt and has done some nice things at the plate and has been just a really, really good player for the Tampa Bay Rays. And I think him, he's needed to have a real good last 2 months of this 2019 season for the Rays to make some noise. Because, yes, pitching is important, but this team has to start scoring some more runs consistently. And I think Avi could be right in the middle of that.
You know, if you had to make a prediction right now, are the Rays a playoff team based on what you've seen, number one? And secondly, if so, how far do you see them going once they reach the postseason?
I think we're right on the border of being a playoff team. I think that, you know, obviously the injury to Blake Snell doesn't help us, and our bullpen right now is kind of in flux. So I think that we're right on the border. I've always said from the beginning I felt that the Rays are one of the top five American League teams, and I still kind of believe that. I think the Twins have overachieved. I think this next 3 or 4 weeks is really going to determine a lot within the American League playoff race, because I think, you know, obviously the Yankees and the Astros are definitely for real, and I think they're going to be there. Everybody was starting to count out the Red Sox a couple of weeks ago, but I don't think they're going anywhere. The Indians are starting to play up to their potential, but I think those are the two interesting teams. The three interesting teams for me are the Indians, Twins, and the Oakland A's. The A's are doing what they seem to do every year, start to play pretty well here in the second half of the season and go on a run. And obviously when you play in the American League West, You're going to be playing some teams that aren't very good. Maybe more often than the Rays would be playing teams that aren't very good. But they've got teams like Seattle and, you know, the Angels that they can deal with a little bit more, and in Texas to a certain extent. So they might have a little bit more of a lenient schedule than we do. But the two teams, I'd be surprised if two teams come out of the Central. I know the Central has three teams, too, that aren't very, very good, in the White Sox, Detroit, and the Kansas City Royals. But, well, the White Sox just beat two out of three from the Rays at Tropicana Field a week ago, and that's really the team that prevented us, I think, from getting the postseason last year, because we got swept by them a year ago at home as well. So we'll know more. We're playing a stretch right now, I think, John, where we're playing 24 out of 27 games against teams that are 500 or below. And if we come out of there where we win like 65% or 66% of those games and get us to about 20 games over 500, then I think we got a chance to make a run. If not, we're going to be on the outside looking in. But as we're built right now, I'm a little skeptical because our bullpen just is not as shut down as it needs to be. And we're a little more dinged up than, you know, a team that isn't as deep at the big league level that you know, like what the Yankees or Red Sox or some of the bigger market teams can do and just reach in their front pocket and supplement injuries and problems. We can't do that. So we need guys to get healthy and get back on the field. And if we do get to the postseason, right now I'm not sure we're built to go a long, long way, but I think that this team's window for postseason play is beginning to open up, and it could be a team that could be battling for postseason spots for the next several years to come.
You know, another team that stands to make the playoffs bullpen pending is the Chicago Cubs, now under their fifth year in the Joe Maddon era. Now, you've been with the Rays since 2005, so you've seen the Lou Piniella years and then, of course, the wildly successful seasons with Maddon at the helm. Right now around here, though, there's been lots of talk about Maddon's managerial style and how it worked originally with the Cubs, but now it's completely the opposite. What was your evaluation of Maddon when he managed in Tampa, and were there signs at the time of possible flaws in his style?
I have no problem with Joe Maddon. You know, Joe Maddon's going to do what he can with the 25 players that you present him with. And you know what? I'm not a Cub fan. Anybody who knows me from my days with the White Sox and growing up in suburban Chicago knows I've never been a Cub fan, really. And I told even Joe, who is still a dear, dear friend of mine, that it would be very, very hard to root for him, but I wouldn't root against him. And I was very, very happy when he won. I was happy for him, I should say, when they won the World Series in 2016. But a lot of the issues that the Cubs are dealing with right now, they're not Joe Maddon issues. They're Theo Epstein issues. Theo Epstein swung and missed in almost every pitching acquisition that he has tried to make here over the last couple of years. The bullpen that the Chicago Cubs had last year was not a very, very good bullpen, and yet he got them, what, 95, 96 wins and got them into the playoffs anyway? So a lot of these shortcomings that the Cubs are talking about are not Joe Maddon problems. I think they're Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer problems. They have not done a very good job of supplementing that roster. And, you know, for a team that prints money, they should have done a heck of a lot better job of putting together a bullpen than they have. I mean, Pedro Strop is a guy that when he was with the Baltimore Orioles several years ago, I like seeing him coming into games. So you can't tell me he's gotten a lot better pitching in the National League. And, you know, again, Craig Kimbrell, they went out and I think they overpaid for the guy. And, you know, they better hope he gets things straightened out, because that's a lot of money to be dealing with a guy who you kept to hold on to for the next couple, 2 or 3 years. Now, once again, like Theo did with the Red Sox and like he can do with the Cubs, he can sweep some of those mistakes under the carpet. But I think right now a lot of the issues that the Cubs have, they're winning because of Joe Maddon, not in spite of Joe Maddon. And I think that a lot of the issues start a lot higher up the ladder than Joe Maddon.
Based on what you just said, is Joe Maddon deserving of a contract extension after this season? And do you think he'll end up getting one?
I don't. I think that, you know, again, I think right now what Theo and those guys are doing are setting Joe up for a fall. I really do. And I think that, you know, I'd be very, very surprised if Joe is back. He should be back. Here's a guy that brought a World Series to a franchise that hadn't had one in well over 100 years. Right then and there, they probably should have given him a couple years extension, but they didn't. And, you know, so be it. So I'd be more surprised if Joe is managing the Chicago Cubs in 2020 than if he wasn't. And I'm not sure if he's going to end up anywhere right now. I mean, you know, as they like to say, the all-star manager is kind of going by the wayside. I mean, you know, you don't see too many managers now making $5, $6, $7 million a year simply because a lot of the decisions are being made by guys playing on the computers at 2, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and or from 9 o'clock in the morning till 2 or 3 in the afternoon, spitting out lineups for you. And some managers really have become more of middle managers because of the fact that there's a lot more stuff going on in the front offices. So I'd be more surprised if Joe Maddon is managing the Chicago Cubs in 2020. If he does get into the postseason and does have a decently long postseason run, I think it improves his chances. But even that, take the New York Yankees, for example, a couple of years ago. Joe Girardi got them to within one game of going to the World Series, and they still said goodbye to him. So I think Joe deserves to stay there for a couple more years at least, but I'd be somewhat surprised if he did.
And, you know, what I think made Maddon so special down in Tampa, and this also applies to Rays' current manager Kevin Cash, is both of their abilities to win games and stay competitive despite being a low-budget team and having one of the league's lowest payrolls. I mean, it's impressive when every year we're talking about the Rays as a wild-card contender and a possible playoff team, yet this year their highest-paid player is Charlie Morton, and last year it was Kevin Kiermaier. How does this organization continue to contend without having the money and resources that other teams do?
Well, obviously, I think, you know, as I said, there's a lot of good things with their research and development. They do a lot of things where they try to determine how to put our players in the best positions possible, matchups between batters and pitchers. I think we've also done some great things now, too, with, you know, run prevention. The opener, as you mentioned, I think at the onset, we put that together where we start relievers and then try to give soft landings to some guys who may not be the perfect 5 or 6 inning starter, but can give us four innings in the middle of a ball game and then get us to the bullpen. So we're on the cutting edge of a lot of things that go on as far as, you know, R&D and trying to get the most out of what we have. But, so I think, and then obviously I think the other thing, John, is playing simple. We've been really, really good at developing pitching. You know, we started out, you go back to the 05, 06 times when we brought up the very first guy in bringing up Jamie Shields, and then he transitioned to James Shields. But then we kept on bringing guys, Scott Kazmir, and, you know, traded for a Matt Garza while he was young. And it just kind of transitioned. Jeremy Hellickson was a rookie of the year. Then we brought in, you know, Alex Cobb. It just seemed like we had the guy to pass the baton to. And now lately it's been Blake Snell and some of the other younger guys. We recognize Tyler Glasnow and his athleticism. What we think, if you know, we can do a couple of tweaks to his delivery or this, that, and the other thing, make him a better pitcher. So I think we've done some of those things here, and that's one of the reasons we're really, really into run prevention. And run prevention, it can, you know, you're never going to be able to keep up with, say, the Red Sox and the Yankees as far as being able to go out and buy some offense and being able to out thump the big boys. But I think we've done a really, really good job of trying to match him up by beating him 4-3 or 3-2. And it's one of the reasons why we've been able to be competitive here in such a tough, tough division.
You know, you mentioned the opener, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this because you were a former collegiate pitcher and collegiate baseball coach. Are you a fan of the opener, or do you feel that it doesn't live up to its purpose? What's your thought on the Rays starting a reliever for the first inning, then coming in with a starting pitcher to finish out the game?
I think if you look at the numbers, I think the opener works. I think, you know, the opener works when you're able to put some pitchers into a spot of you know, one-on-one matchups that a regular number five guy that might pitch to a 4.50 or a 5 ERA, why would you just throw him out there because it's his day? If you can work it out where you start an opener and then you bring in a guy as a bulk guy, and now that five runs you might allow becomes 3 or 4 runs. I'm a big fan of it maybe one time through the rotation. I'm not a big fan of it 2 and 3 times through the rotation, and that's what we've had to do sometimes because of injuries, because I think what it does then is it starts to expose mediocre pitching a little bit more often. And when you play, like I said, in a division that has the teams like the Red Sox and the Yankees, and even, you know, a younger team like the Blue Jays that have some thumpers, if you start overexposing mediocre pitching, it's going to get hit hard. But I was with a White Sox team back in 03 and 04 that had a number five starter that probably didn't even win more than 1 or 2 games. And it cost them a chance to get to the postseason. If the White Sox or teams back in those days would have thought about an opener situation and given them a chance to win half of those games, we might have been in the postseason. And then when you have 3 or 4 real good starters, which the White Sox had at that time, then you can make a postseason run. So I think when you use an opener and utilize it maybe once through the rotation, that's really, really good. When you start to overexpose it and do it 4 and 5 times, like I think the Rays have done here a little bit of late, I think that's when it starts to get overexposed, and that's when you start to your bullpen starts to get a little tired too.
And when we talk about creativity and making a profound change, Major League Baseball has made quite an interesting proposition about the Rays and their future in the Tampa Bay area. The idea is that they'll play half of their home games in Montreal during the summer months and play back at the Trop during the spring when the weather is less pleasant. Now, I know this also has a lot to do with the team's quest for a new stadium and their low home attendance, but are you privy to this proposal? What are your thoughts on the split home season?
Well, I am somewhat familiar with what their thought process is, and I think on paper it does a really, really good idea. I think, there's a lot of things to, if you just look at it on paper, you think, hey, wow, you know what? This makes some sense. Let's build a smaller ballpark with a smaller footprint where you can save $200 or $300 million by not having to put a roof on it and then only utilize it, say, in the months of March, April, May, and into June. And then you build another similar ballpark in another city. Now it's summertime and they don't have to worry about the cold weather. And in June, July, August, and into September, when it stays light out in Montreal till almost 9:30, 10 o'clock, it can be kind of an interesting proposition. Now, again, on paper, it sounds good. You double up maybe your media rights. You double up radio stations. You double up TV properties. You double up a few other things. Montreal has a few more big corporations than, say, Tampa St. Pete does. But then when you start getting to the heartbeat, I think that's when it starts to get a little tough. When you start thinking that the players have to find two houses, have to find two doctors, have to find two vets if they have dogs, have to find, two babysitters. And then in the middle of the season, it's a tough enough transition to find a place to live at the beginning of April or March or end of March to spend the rest of the season and then have to do it twice. We have to go and move into a place in March and have to move into a place again in June or July when you move. In the middle of the season. And, and then when you think about two different countries, I mean, now you're thinking about two different monetary forms, two different medical situations where, the medicine and everything else in Canada is a little different than it is here in the United States. So then when you start dealing with the heartbeat, I think it starts to get, you start thinking of a lot of different hoops that have to be jumped through. And I think, again, on a piece of paper, it kind of sounds intriguing when it comes to actually trying to do it. I think it's going to be really, really tough, and I'd be really, really surprised if the Major League Baseball Players Association says, yeah, this is a good idea. Let's go ahead and do this.
Moving now to your personal careers, I mentioned in your bio, you began your time in sports media during college, all the while balancing your commitment to Elmhurst's baseball team and your academics. But when you finished school, you had decided to go into coaching, both at Elmhurst and then at the University of Chicago. Why did you pivot towards a coaching career after college, and what ended up making you leave coaching to come back to sports media?
Well, when I was finishing up, when I was at Elmhurst College, I got a full-time gig, as you said, at Sports Phone, and I did that for parts of 4 years and covered a Super Bowl, covered some NHL playoffs and NBA playoffs and baseball games. But I think in the back of my mind, I didn't just want to be a sports anchor. I always wanted to be more of a sports play-by-play guy. But at that time, I really wasn't too familiar with what kind of avenues to explore. So what happened was I became the actual PR director of the Chicago Bruisers of an Arena Football League team for a year and did that for a while and had a blast doing it. But then they decided that they were going to suspend operations for a year. So I was kind of being held in limbo for a bit. So that's when I called my old college basketball or baseball coach, Charlie Gale at Elmhurst College. And I said, hey, do you need an assistant? And he said, as a matter of fact, I do. So I went back there and became the pitching coach and the recruiting coordinator for both baseball and football and did some things that way. And then while I did that for a year, the very next year, I got a phone call from the University of Chicago asking me if I'd be interested in being their interim head baseball coach, and went in and interviewed for the job. And at about 25 years old, I got it and actually was kind of intrigued about it. Had a blast. I don't like to say that if I regret anything, but the only thing is that while I think we were a good team. I think we ended up 15-20 or 14-21, something like that, and beat teams like St. Joseph's and an Indiana Division II team. Played Notre Dame's, played good teams, and did very, very well at times. But I think I managed like I thought I should manage, and not the way I probably was, as the person I was. And I wish I could maybe redo a couple of things that way. But had a blast doing it. Thought about staying and doing it. And then I called my pitching coach from college, who was a manager with the Baltimore Orioles organization, and I said, "Hey, I want to stay in coaching. Would you be a reference on my resume?" And he said, "No, he wouldn't be a reference." So he said, I said, "Well, why not?" He said, "I want you to get back into broadcasting." And so he knew of a team from Wausau, Wisconsin that was moving down to suburban Chicago, the Kane County Cougars, and told me to send him a tape of me doing a game. I did. And next thing you know, I was the play-by-play voice of the Tampa Bay Rays, or the Kane County Cougars for 5 years. And that's how I started getting into baseball broadcasting.
Fortunately enough, I think you made the right decision, as now you've been with the Rays for 15 years, calling all of their games on the radio. How did you end up earning the Rays job? And looking back on it now, did you ever think that you'd still be with the team in 2019?
Well, you know, it was one of those things, too, where, you know, I was doing a bunch of different things. I was the pregame, postgame host of the White Sox. I started out filling in for about 25 to 30 games with John Rooney when he would go do Westwood One and a few other things. And I thought, all right, well, this is kind of a cool gig, and got to travel a little bit. And then John stopped doing some of his auxiliary work, and I just kind of focused mostly on being a pregame, postgame host. And I did some play-by-play for UIC, did some things for Notre Dame. So I had a full-time kind of schedule between the four or five gigs. Well, it was paying me pretty decently. And then toward the end of the 04 season, my wife and I moved into a brand new home in Orland Park that was just a couple blocks away from her sister's. And I thought, all right, well, you know, everything I did to that house was going to be for the next 30 years. And then I was on a UIC basketball trip, and I think it was we were getting ready to play Duke in North Carolina, Wilmington. And I got a phone call from somebody who said, would you be willing to, would you want to apply for the Tampa Bay Devil Rays radio job? And I honestly thought about it for a week because I really wasn't sure I wanted to do it. They weren't a very good team. We weren't hearing too many good things about the franchise. And after about a week, I just thought, you know what? It's one of only 30 gigs like this in the world. So why don't I just put a tape together and see what happens? So that's exactly what I did. I sent a tape in, and from what I understand, that they got close to 300 people applying for the gig, and I heard that they had just whittled down the list to about 10 people when my CD came in. And out of the kindness of his heart, the VP of Public Relations at the time took the CD and decided, you know what, I'll listen to it. And he did, and then he called in the committee, and he said, hey, you guys might want to listen to this. I think we got another finalist. And so I was the 11th finalist in the final 10. And then one thing led to another. I had an interview, and I took the gig. And you know what? Now you find out after doing this for a while why guys don't want to leave these jobs. I mean, it beats working for a living. I always thought that maybe the best job in the world would be to maybe do winter sports in the city of Chicago, and then have the summers in Chicago off, but I think I might have found a better way to do it. I work in the summertime in Florida, so I get out of the heat every once in a while by going to different cities in Seattle and Minnesota and what have you during the hot summer months. And then when I'm off, I've got some of the best Florida weather going, where it's 75 degrees and sunny a lot of times. And I'm able to sit outside and do things outside during the entire off season and have a blast doing it. So you look back at it, did I think I'd be there for 15 years? I don't know. I kind of joked around with my buddies. I said, when I got the job at 40 years old, I told them I got a 25-year head start on everybody coming down to Florida. So my hope is that we get all this stuff with the stadium and figured out. I think that, you know, it can work in Tampa, Tampa Bay. I think it can work on the Tampa side. Our TV ratings are very, very good. I know that, you know, I saw some notes that the White Sox were bragging about getting 1.2s and 1.3s on their TV broadcasts. Our guys against the Yankees were getting fours and fives. So, you know, we have people that watch the games. We have people that listen to the games. We just got to start figuring out ways to get guys to the games. And I think if we get on the Tampa side when it's all said and done, I think it would work. But guys with, you know, smarter people than me are handling that situation. I hope they do get it done because I like living there. I really do.
What's been the best moment that you've been a part of as the Rays voice over the past 15 years?
Well, obviously, going to the World Series was incredible. I mean, you know, this was, you know, you get there in 05, and it's Lou Piniella's last year, and it's a mess, and, you know, there's a transition in ownership, and you deal with that. And then in the 06, 07 years, you're starting to get to know Joe, but we're averaging close to 100 losses a year. And then 08 starts, and, you know, you're thinking, all right, well, maybe we can make a run at 500, and next thing you know, we're making a run at the postseason. And so, you know, there's so many magical moments during that 08 year. Cliff Floyd hitting a walk-off homer against the White Sox in late May. Dan Johnson's home run off of Papelbon to give the Rays the lead or to tie the ball game late when we were on the verge of maybe giving up first place to the Red Sox in September. You know, then beating the White Sox in the postseason. winning Game 7 over the Red Sox at Tropicana Field in front of a packed house, and then going to the World Series in 08. So I think that's definitely got to be the highlight for me is, you know, there's still a lot of broadcasters out there who have never been able to call a World Series game, and I was fortunate that my fourth year, that's what I was doing. And I got a chance to call a pennant-winning play. It's one of my I still – you know, I know it sounds maybe a little narcissistic that you get goosebumps when you hear one of your own calls, but, you know, people will come up to me all through Tampa Bay and redo that call for me every once in a while. And that definitely is one of the highlights of my career. I had a blast doing college basketball. UIC, we went to the NCAA tournament three times. That's up there too. But being able to call a pennant-clinching play and going to the World Series, it's a broadcaster's dream. And, you know, it'll be – and whenever it's the first time, it's always going to be tough to surpass it, that's for sure.
And Dave, before we let you go today, let's go back to the 1997 season for a moment. Now, you were the radio voice of the White Sox at the time, and during a game against Boston, Albert Bell hit a go-ahead grand slam in the ninth inning to give the Sox the lead. When you were making the call, what ended up happening? And today, is that one of the funniest moments in your broadcasting career?
Yeah, I'd like to know how you know about that, but... no, it was, I'm in Boston now. It's kind of funny because every time I'm in that booth, I do think about it. But, you know, I was never really a guy, that went to the doctor too much. And I had kind of a tickle in my throat for about 2 or 3 weeks. And, you know, I knew it had bothered me a little bit when I got excited, but here's Albert Bell coming up in the top of the ninth inning, the White Sox are down a couple of runs and he hits a grand slam. And so I'm getting ready and here's a deep drive center field, you know, back to the wall. And it is. Oh, and there's nothing there. And I try to clear my throat and shut the mic off real fast. It's a grand slam. And nothing's coming out. And so I'm trying to call it, trying to get it going. Nothing's happening. I'm totally crushed because it's, you know, you're doing one game a week or one game, maybe two games a week. And you have such a magical moment. You're thinking, wow, this is going to end up in different places. And it turns out our guys at AM 1000 at that particular time made it into a really, really funny promo. I still wish I had it, but they said, you know, move over with Harry King. We got Dave Wills. And, you know, you hear like Harry clear and his phone go, hey, oh, oh. And then next thing you know, you hear Dave Wills trying to call a grand slam. And so, Cub fans, you might have Harry Carey, but we have Dave Wills. And it made a real kind of funny promo out of it. But, yeah, it's a moment that was rather interesting at the time, to say the least, and made me go to the doctor. The very next day and found out that I had a pretty severe case of bronchitis and on the verge of getting walking pneumonia. And it took a messed up call and a grand slam to get me to go to the doc. But I'm glad I did. But it's a memory that still makes me chuckle. And like I said, I'd love to have the audio to it. I have never been able to find it.
Well, Dave, thank you so much for being here on the show today. Great content, great conversation, and hope to have you on again soon. Thank you.
Anytime. Thanks for having me and good luck.
What an honor it was to welcome Dave Wills onto today's show as we talk with him about some Tampa Bay Rays baseball news, some national MLB headlines, plus his amazing broadcasting career. And what I enjoyed most about having Dave on this show today is that when you talk baseball with him, it's not just from a broadcaster's point of view. As we talked about during the interview, Dave was a former college coach and a college recruiting coordinator. So when you talk with him about the game, it's not just stats and an outsider's perspective. You're getting an insider's perspective and a coaching perspective whenever Dave talks baseball, which is why today I truly enjoyed welcoming him onto the show. Well, that does it for us here at Sports Talk Chicago. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at ChiTalkSports and hit me up personally on Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram at John Zags, on Twitter at John Z Sports, and now on Facebook at John Zagluel. Also, make sure to subscribe to the website. You can find the subscription box on the homepage of the site. Simply type in your email, click yes on the confirmation email, and from there, you'll be subscribed. You'll receive every new podcast and article directly to your email. And remember, Sports Talk Chicago is now on iTunes and Google Play. Simply search Sports Talk Chicago and every podcast from the 2018-19 calendar year is now available. Feel free to leave us a 5-star rating and or write a review. Your support is greatly appreciated. Thank you again for listening to today's show and have a great day.